start conference recording, press 1. To return to the recording has started.
It's about to begin a new sugya. Just to put us back into the swing of things in terms of Daf Hey, where I quoted different lists of Avos Nezikin. The Mishnah, of course, had quoted the famous 4 Avos Nezikin. Then there were a series of brises that added on. There were 13 Avos Nezikin, 24 Avos Nezikin. In the end, there really wasn't much of a machlokes. It was more of a machlokes in a literary sense rather than a halachic sense. Everybody agrees that all of these cases are chayav. The question is whether they make the list or not. So our Tana was only dealing with a very, very limited list, and Rabbi Chi and Rabbi Yoshua were dealing with a little bit longer lists, and each one had reasons why they did or did not want to add on certain of the mazikin. But at the end of the day, pretty much all of them are going to be chayav according to everybody. And now the Gemara begins to address 3 of the mazikin that make it into the last list, into the list of Rabbi Chiyas, but were missing from the previous list of Rabbi Oshia. So he asks the Gemara, the first of Ramakama, there were 3 cases that were listed by Rabbi Chiya. One was metame. Metame means that I'm a mazik. I really, really want to cause you damage, but I'm a very lumdish mazik. Instead of taking a hammer and smashing your window, I take a dead mouse and I put it onto your truma. Put it onto that's going to really do it to you. So again, it's going to cause you a quote unquote loss of money. Now you can't use it anymore. So that's a metame. That's the case of metame. Medameya is I go ahead and you happen not to be a kohen, and I happen to have some access to truma. So what I do is I take some truma wine and I mix it into your chulin wine. I mix it in to the prop. I didn't say I'm not a lamdan. I'm a mazik, but I'm a lamdan also. I mixed it into the proportion that it's going to trafe up your wine. The din is if you have 200 times of your chulin wine to the 1 drop of truma wine, then it's okay. But if it's less than that, so that's going to trafe up, that's going to, not really trafe up, it's going to make it impossible for anyone except for a kohen to drink this wine. So I just caused you another loss of damage. Or a menasech. A menasech is actually a machlokas. We spoke about this in the past, that according to one opinion, it means you literally poured somebody else's wine to an idol. According to the other opinion, you mixed in avodah zarah wine, mixed in yainesk, mixed in trefa wine with the other fellow's wine. So in all 3 of these cases, you caused a loss of money. And these are all cases of mammon, presumably, because these are real losses. So the payment that I'm making is commensurate to the loss. So he asks the Gemara, listening, so that these 3 cases should have been listed in the first brice. When Rabbi Oshia talks about nezek, he talks about cases of regular damage, he should have made reference to these 3 cases as well. So the Gemara says, no, that there's a very good reason why Rabbi Oshia left these out. Manavshach. Said, either way you go, no matter what your lumdus is, no matter what you think about this shaila, we can understand why Rabbi Yosha left it out. Ihezek shero nika shme hezek, hatana lehez nezek. Ihezek shero nika lo shme hezek, hava le knasa ve knasa lo kamai re. So comes the Gemara and makes a very, very quick reference to the main part of Asugya and Gitnafna and Gimel, that there's a major question about what the status of these kinds of hezeks is. This damage, so to speak, just how serious, just how real is this damage? So on the one hand, it is causing the person a loss of money. It's true. He had truma, now he can't use it for anything. He had wine, now the wine is trafe. There is a real loss of damage, loss of money. However, the problem is that it's not physical in nature. It's only halachic in nature. And if you look at it, it's what's called hezek shero niko. It's not really niko the eye. It's not really recognizable. The wine looks the same. The fruit looks the same. Everything looks the same. So maybe one could argue that hezek shero niko is not really damaged. They're really on a level of the araisa. That's not called mazik. The Torah tells us, maka nefesh beim yishamena. The model of mazik, mamon chaveru, is I kill your animal. I do something. I take a hammer and I smash your window. That's called mazik, mamon chaveru. If I mazik your mamon through some roundabout halachic mechanism called hezek shenanikar, so we're not so sure that's called hezek altogether. Now, truth to be told, I'm chayev for that. The Mishnah says in Gittin, I am chayev. But one could argue maybe that's a kenas. Maybe that's only a penalty midirabbanan. Maybe minatori really do, in fact, go off scot-free. So that's a big machlekes. We're going to get to that for machlekes in a moment. That's a machlekes amarayim. Is hezek shenanikar really considered to be full-fledged hezek on a love of deraisa? What do I say? No, it's only chayev on love of the Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, b'manavshach, no matter what Rabbi Oshia held on that pivotal question, we understand why he didn't want to mention these 3 cases in his braisa. Because, let's go back to the Gemara for a second, at the top line, hezek shenikah shmehezek, if you really hold that hezek shenikah is the same as regular hezek, there is no difference in halacha on a love of the Rabbanan, between smashing a window and being metami someone's taros, hatar le nezek. We already said Nezek. Rabbi Yosha listed Nezek as one of the 13 of his Avos Mazikin. So if you hold that Betamei Taros is the same as breaking a window, it was already there, it was already on the list. And if you take the other approach, Yehezek Sherenik Alosh Behezek, so then Havala Kenasa, then it's not really Chayiv, it's really only a Kenas, or the Kenasa Lokamairi. And Rabbi Yosha wasn't interested in mentioning Kenasos. So when all the dust settles, we know that Yechayiv. Yechayiv according to our Mishnah, Yechayiv according to Rabbi Yosha, Yechayiv according to Rabbi Chiya, Yechayiv according to the Sugin Gittin. There's never ever a question about Tachlis. Bottom line, you have to pay for these acts of quote unquote Nezek. What's unclear is what the Mechayiv is. Is the Mechayiv on a level of Deraisa, it's called Hezek Gomor? Is the Mechayiv only on a level of Derabanan, it's called basically not Hezek, and therefore it's only Betaras Kenas?
But so, how does he ask if the Hezek, if it's truly a Hezek, Hatanale? In the first four that were mentioned, those were Hezekim too, and they were mentioned separately.
Each one of those, right, but the difference is those were Mazikin of my mamon. There it's a Shor Shehizik, and it's a Bor Shehizik, a Shehizik,
right.
Whereas Rabbi Osha mentions Adam Amazik. When he says Nezek in his Braisa, so that refers to an Adam Amazik Mamon Chavero. So once you tell me that Hezek Sherenikar is called Hezek, so then it's subsumed under Mazik Mamon Chavero. So it really it would be the same. It's different than the Bor and the Shor and the Eish, things which are not really Gufa Adam Shehizik. So at the end of the day, we don't really know any nafkamina yet because you're going to be chayav to bay. So we're not quite sure whether it really matters in halacha. It matters in terms of style, in terms of literary, in terms of where it fits, it doesn't fit into the braises. But in terms of realistically, we're not quite sure. But now we have to go back really to the sugya in Gittin and Daftin Gimel because that's really where the sugya appears. And first of all, identify the two opinions and where they emanate from about whether Hezek Sherenikar is called Hezek or not. And then we have to really fine-tune a little bit, what is Hezek Sherenikar? We gave some illustrations, some cases of Hezek Sherenikar, but we may not necessarily have a 100% definition of what precisely it is. How exactly do you define what is called Hezek Sherenikar? So let's begin with the sugya in Gittin and Daftin Gimel and Aleph, where the Gemara quotes Machlokes Amoraim as to where this all came from. What exactly is the status of Hezek Sherenikar? What led to this whole, almost like a discussion, this whole Machlokes about whether Hezek Sherenikar is a Hezek or not a Hezek, is a Mishnah in Maseches Gittin. The Mishnah is a very, very cryptic Mishnah. So it's really one line Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Amitavim and the Mem and Menasech, the three cases that we mentioned, Amitavim Yataris, Amitavim Yawain, Rune Yawain, whatever it is. So the Mishnah says, B'mezir Chayev B'shagig Potter. If I do it intentionally, I'm chayef to bay. If I did it by mistake and didn't realize it, I didn't even realize I'm holding a mouse, I touched a truma, the whole thing was all by mistake, so then b'shokig, I'm going to be potter. So that Mishnah in and of itself is very ambiguous and very, very difficult to understand because that Mishnah seems to fly in the face of a rule that we know about Adam Amaz. It's called Adam Worldly Olam. We know that if I damage you, it doesn't matter whether I damaged you with absolute 100% intent to smash your window or whether it was a mistake, I'm still chayef to bay. The Mishnah derives this, the Gemara in Mishnah, the Gemara at the end of the second paragraph of Maseches Bava Kamma derives this all from Sukkim, that Adam Wadli Olam. Maybe an exception of what's called an Onex Gomer, if some crazy, unbelievable thing happened that I couldn't have even anticipated at all, and even that's Machlokes Tosfos and the Ramban. But a regular just Shogeg, I didn't know. Nobody told me that if Truma becomes Tummy, you can't eat it anymore. That's not an excuse. So the rule would be Adam Wadli Olam. So the problem is, so why does the Mishnah say otherwise? Why does the Mishnah say that when you mazik somebody through metabit the mem and asech, you're only chayav amazin and you're exempt the shogeg? Why should that be so? So this is what led to the machlekes amaroyim and the second of the makaris on gittin up and gimel and aleph. Amechiskiya, devar Torah echad shogeg v'echad amazin chayav. Chiskiya argues that min haTorah you're chayav no matter what. Min haTorah hezek sherenikar is the same, identical to hezek hanikar. Touching a mouse to your truma is like smashing your window, and I'm chayev no matter what. Bem amazing, bem shogi. My time, why is that? Hezek shir nikish me hezek. Chizki's opinion was that it's considered to be full bona fide hezek. Umatam amru b'shogig potter. So why does the Mishnah say that if you do it unintentionally, you're exempt? Kidei sheyodio. It's for a totally different reason, a completely different concern mid the Rabbanon. The Chazal were concerned that if I was metame your tara, so I trafed up your wine. We want the mazik to inform the nizak. Why? Because at the end of the day, now he has trafed wine, now he has trafed, now he has truma tebe on his hands. So we want to encourage him to inform the nizak. The problem is, if we're going to make him have to pay for that information, he may not be so forthcoming with it. So therefore, Chazal made the following leniency. They gave the following akula for the other mamazik in this matter. If you made a mistake, you didn't mean intentionally to destroy his wine, to destroy his tyrus, etc. So come forward, admit, we're shogig anyway, and we're going to give you a buy. We're going to give you a freebie on this one. Even though minatari you have to pay, but midrabanan, hefka beis and hefka, we're going to say you don't have to pay, we're going to exempt you in order to encourage you to come forward with the truth. So otherwise, the person won't be nichshal in eating trefa food. So yes, if that's the case, that's the reason that we're going to do anything in our power to cause him to confess, and we're going to make a deal with him, confess that we won't make you pay. So nami. So why don't we turn around and do the same thing b'meizid? If he was mitame, the person's taurus b'meizid, we really want him to come forward and tell us. So therefore, let's cut him a deal here also. We'll say to him, listen, you come forward and moda that you did it. And then we're not going to make you pay also. So the Gemara says, no. Obviously, he's going to tell him. You know what he's going to tell him? You're talking about a Rosh. You're talking about a Mazik, maybe a Daim, a Mazik, b'mezid. His whole goal was to take the dead mouse, touch it to the guy's truma, and then tell him about it. If he's not going to tell him about it, so what kind of aggravation is that? So you have to go into the criminal mind. You're going to go study a little bit the criminology. So obviously, if I'm coming to damage your property, and I very much want to damage your property, if I don't tell you about it, you won't even know that it was damaged. You won't suffer the loss, so to speak. So if I come and I break your window, I'll break your window in the dark of night, I won't tell you, because you wake up the next morning, you see a broken window, you'll be upset. But if I take a mouse and put it on your truma, and I don't tell you, so how are you ever going to know? So what did I ever accomplish? So obviously I'm going to tell you about it. So the Gemara says, therefore, there's no reason to exempt him from Tashlumin. So therefore, we throw the book at him, and we make him to pay on the love of the Raisa.
Why do you believe it?
Why? Because Hadas Baldin made him dummy. Because if I come forward and I say I broke your window, we believe you, and you have to pay.
But he's not a Rush. He's not when he's.
Hadas Baldin made him dummy is going to work even if he's saying that it's a Rush, right? If a person says I stole something, so you're saying a very lumdish shavur. We don't really believe me that I stole. We believe me that I'm chayav the money. So we split what you're saying in a sense. We don't really believe that you broke into the guy's house, but we do believe that you owe the person $100. Why you owe him $100? Maybe you buy $100. I don't know why we're rationalizing why you owe the money. So it's a very lumdish shavur.
We consider that true.
That's another question. I mean, Tosis has a chiddush in Mitzvah. Tosis writes that if a person comes forward derech tshuva, then we don't say ain't other meis matzah rosh. That's a very big chiddush. But here, the person is not necessarily saying it. I mean, every time the case is being mowed, he's doing a derech tshuva. Maybe, I'm not sure. I don't know. So anyway, get back to that story. So according to Chizkiah, we understand Pshat the Mishnah. The Mishnah at first is very difficult because the Mishnah is differentiating between meizid and shoga, categories that don't really belong in the parasha of Mazik. And Chizkiah is saying, you're right, Minatari, they really don't belong. Minatari, Yechayv, and both of them, we're going to exempt you in order to encourage you to come forward, at least in the case of Shogeg. But Rabbi Yochanan disagrees in Tanakh. Rabbi Yochanan was a Talmud of Chizkiah. Rabbi Yochanan turns around and says, the end of the second line, Rabbi Yochanan, the absolute opposite. Minatora, you're totally potter. Minatora, if you're metami the person's tyrus, you don't have to pay a penny. Why? My time hezek she'en nikolosh mehezek. It's not the same as breaking a window. It's called hezek she'en onikar. So umatam omer b'mezid chayev. So why in fact do Chazal say that you have to pay b'mezid? If it's potter, it's potter. Shelo yeh kolecha v'yechad holuch metami tyrus shechaver v'yom potter. And to discourage people from doing such damaging kind of behavior. And even though Minatora you can hide behind Hezek Shein HaNikar, it's still a mean thing to do, it's still a bad thing to do. And therefore, Chazal instituted a knas, they instituted a punishment, a fine for the person who does that. So Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan end up in the exact same place. They end up like exactly where they're supposed to end up, like the Mishnah says, that if Mezid is Chayav Shogeg Potter. How they got there is radically different. It's like the proverbial half cup of water. So either you started out with a full cup or an empty cup, but in the end of the day, you're at the same place. So now that we have a little bit of a better understanding what the two opinions are, which again in our Gemara is not resolved, but what the two opinions are about what the status of Hezek Shein HaNikar is it Chayav Torah as Mamon or Midrabanan as Knas, we're still not quite sure what exactly Hezek Shein HaNikar is. We think we understand it. We said it's not recognizable, but we have to fine tune a little bit. What exactly does it mean, not recognizable? So if you take a look back at the first of the Ramakamos, so that line, after the three lines of the Gemara, is the Rashi. So she'ein on nikar. So Rashi says, kigon hocha, de'ein ha-nezek nikar besocha peiros lochas lehu. So Rashi gives what we would probably call the most simple, straightforward explanation, what we suspected is pshat and hezek she'ein nikar, which means that you look at the fruit, and I don't say anything. If you look with very spiritual intent and you understand how to see what Dover Torah and Dover Tama is, then you'll sense, hey, Gaval, this fruit was touched by a mouse. But for your average bystander, looks at the fruit looks the same as it always was. When we were learning the Sugya and Shir, I said this is part of a general question. We spoke about this many times. Who makes determinations in halacha? The answer is not always the same. Sometimes there are very, very halachic criteria. We view something through the eyes of halacha and say, this is damaged because the halacha says it's damaged. And sometimes we look through the eyes of the balbatim, through the eyes of the metzias, through the eyes of the world, and then you don't have to look at it with such a zalumdish view. If a average person on the street looks at it and says, it's a broken window. I don't have to bring in the rabbi to see whether the window's broken. You get looks at the street, you see the window's broken. Whereas over here, to tell me that the fruit is tame. Wait a second, tame. You ask a person on the street, he doesn't know what tame means. So I try to give the marshal for the boys. I have a bunch of boys in the shiur from TDEC, so at least they appreciate the marshal. I said, who comes in and makes the call? Do we call in Julio? Julio's there, the fruit guy. The guy who owns the famous fruit store in TDEC. So Julio makes the call. So if you ask Julio and ask him, here you have these grapes. And I said, Julio, these grapes were touched by a mouse an hour ago. He looked, I don't see a mouse. So I mean, whether you should or should not be selling them for the same price, I can't tell you. But in terms touched by a mouse. So the nothing really happened to these grapes. Lefira os ene Julio. But if you look at if you bring Moshe Rabbeinu in into Moshe Rabbeinu, these grapes were touched by a mouse. Keval, now the tame, you can't eat them. It's true, Matara, the whole story. So that's a question. So that seems to be the root of the issue. So that's exactly how Rashi defined Hezek She'edo Nikar. There's nothing nikar. There's nothing physically recognizable. It may be spiritually true, but it's not physically recognizable. And that's why it falls into the category of Hezek She'edo Nikar. Now again, according to Chizkiyah, it doesn't make a difference. According to Chizkiyah, it's still Chayav in the Torah. But Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. We have a Defalstek with Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees for that very reason.
According to Rashi, if you did something that was physically unrecognizable, would that be considered? Would that real hezek, or would that also be
if it's physically unrecognizable?
Put some nerve agent on it. That's now
right. That would be hezek shenika. Right.
That's not halachic. It's
right.
Actually
that's physical. Right. Right. It's not right. Right. According to Rashi, pashas has nothing to do with halachic per se. It has more to do with is it nikola ayin.
You know all the examples of the Gemara.
Right.
Are
right. Because Chazal, I guess couldn't. I guess they weren't talking about the nerve agents. They weren't fathoming such concepts. Right. However, Tosus has a different spin on what exactly Hezek She'edo Nikar is all about. Just the very definition of Hezek She'edo Nikar is different according to Tosfos. So if you take a look at the Tosfos in Bava Kamma, the fourth of the Rama Kamos. So Tosfos says, on the second line, of Amitami Taras Chavero, Afal Pisha Rowan Hasheretz Alataros, Lo Choshev Hezek Nikar, Demi Odeya Im Hochsharu. Tosfos, now one line gives you an entirely different picture. Wow. Tosfos says, I'm watching a person put a mouse on grapes. So what? Why do I automatically conclude that a damage happened at that point? Why? Maybe the grapes were never mukshal kabatuma. Maybe they never were wet in the first place. The Torah says, v'chiyutan mayim olzera, the only time something is subject, is susceptible to tuma, is if it got wet at first. How do you know that ever happened? So Tosfos says the reason why something is called hezek she'edo nikar is not because the hezek is not nikar in the fruit. If lu yitzuyev, if I would have seen, if I would have watched the person pour water and then put the mouse on, so then maybe one can argue that is called hezek nikar. Even though an hour later, Julio can't tell the difference. That's not why it's called hezek she'edo nikar. Why it's called hezek she'edo nikar, according to Tosfos, put in some brisket terminology, it's not that it's not nikar in the cheftza, it's not nikar in the maisa hezek. It means b'shas maisa that the hezek is happening. Nobody really could tell for certain that anything wrong is taking place. So let's say, like Marshall, I see somebody, I'm watching somebody pouring truma wine into somebody else's wine, but I don't know it's truma. I have no idea if it would be marked up with big bold letters. This is truma, and I'm putting the truma into the other guy's wine. Maybe that would be called hezek and ikra korzitaisis. But b'shas maisa hezek, nobody really can sense. Nobody can discern that it's anything happening. Forget about Julio not being able to discern. Moshe Rabbeinu also can't discern, because if you don't know the facts that it was Huxley Kapatuma, so then it's not going to become Tumah in the first place. Well, let's say, for example, I see a person pouring wine in front of an idol. Wow, that looks pretty nicker. Not necessarily. Any and every pouring of wine in front of an aisle does not treif up the wine. It only declares the wine to be treif if the person's intending to worship that idol. I happen to be standing there and I'm pouring myself a cup of wine and there's an idol here. That doesn't change anything about the status of the wine. So how do you know? So the answer is you don't know. The only way you know, you have to read the person's mind. Well, that's called the Hezek Shira Nikar. I mean, since Bishas Maisa, when I'm watching the pouring of the wine, I cannot walk away from that action and say, I witnessed damage. How do you know? I can't walk away from a mouse touching grapes and saying, I witnessed damage. How do you know? Maybe it wasn't huksha, maybe it wasn't wet in the first place. So whenever there's a chisaron, whenever there's a deficiency in the shas ha-hezek, that is what's labeled as hezek shel nikar. So it's a very, very fine line between Rashi's definition of hachadena hezek nikar b'socha peiros. According to Rashi, it doesn't really depend on the shas maisa. It depends that afterwards, is this a broken window? Broken windows are visible to the eye. Fruit or not. According to Tosfos, it's what happened with Shas Maisa. Is there any real nafka mina between the two? So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman suggests there will be a very, very real difference between the two. What if a metame something of yours that doesn't even require heksher? What doesn't require heksher? Mashkin. If you have a cup of water, if you touch a dead mouse, to a cup of wine, that wine becomes tamei gama min haTorah. It doesn't need heksher. It's eilucha heksher gama mizet.
Right.
It itself is wet, I mean, so to speak. So the whole parasha of heksher only applies to Tumas Oakland. Obviously, it doesn't apply to Tumas Mashkin. So Rabbi Chanan says, what would the din be? If I'm standing and I'm watching a person take a dead mouse and drop it into the person's wine and then take it out. So now what? Is that called hezek haNikar? Is that called Hezek Shein HaNikar? So according to Rashi, it's still Hezek Shein HaNikar, because at the end of the day, the magic words are that Ein HaNezek Nikar B'Sech HaPeres L'Chasel Hu. There's nothing chaser. There's nothing missing. So the same way that Julio didn't chop that the grapes were touched by a mouse, Julio can't tell whether the wine was touched by a mouse. And therefore, according to Rashi, that would fall under the category of Hezek Shein HaNikar, which would be subject to the Machlokes Chizkin Rabbi Yochanan. And we paskin Allah like Rabbi Yochanan that ben HaTorah and HaChayev, it's only B'Torah's Kenas.
Does the heksher have to be right then? In other words, does it have to be wet?
No, it could be as long as it was wet at one time, even though it's subsequently dried. Right. As long as it was at one time wet, Ritzon HaBailam. The Bailam are happy that at one time was washed off, so that's good enough for the Olam Vod, even though right now it's dry. So comes Tosfos and would say about this case of dropping the mouse into the wine, Tosfos would say, wait a second, who says that's called Hezek Shein HaNikar? Any person under the sun takes a look and see. I can tell. You don't have to ask Julio to tell. Any Moshe Rabbeinu, any person who understands anything about Halacha will realize that you put the grapes onto the wine, you just were mafsid that wine. You put the mouse onto the wine, you were just mafsid that wine. So you don't have that smart to fall back on. How do you know? Maybe it wasn't Huchshar, it's Hezek Shein HaNikar, it's B'Shas Mais, it's not Nikar. No, says Rabbi Chanan, that was Dvar B'Talim. That Svar makes sense when you're dealing with the food, when you're dealing with the liquids, then all bets are off. So comes Rabbi Chanan and highlights, there'll be a very, very real Nafkamin Ladina between Rashi and our Sugya's formulation and Tosus in the Elenum of Akamah's formulation. Much of this Machlokes Rashi and Tosus now revolves around a case that appears in the Gemara that's not exactly clear what the status of this case is. And this case is going to be, this is probably the first time I'm bumping into this case. But in the next couple of weeks, we're going to see this case so many times, we'll hopefully be able to say this in our sleep, this case. So comes the Gemara, the third of the Mamakomos. It's a sugi that appears in Bava Kama Daf Kuf Amud Aleph. It's the sugi of Mechitzas HaKerem Shenifritza. So we need just a little bit of a background of why do you have a Mechitzas HaKerem in the first place? Forget about a breaking, why is it there in the first place? The reason why it's there is because your next door neighbor is planting wheat and barley right near the grapes, and that's a no-no. There's an Issa D'Oraisa called Kili HaKerem. When you have grapes and wheat and barley all in the same area, that's going to pose a problem. So how do you separate between the two? So there are two different ways of doing it. So the Mishnayos tell us, either you separate by distance, if there's X amount, Dalarabas, whatever the shear is between the grapes and the other seeds, or if you want to plant your grapes right next to other grains, you can do that provided that there's a halachic mechitza between the two. Provided that there's a wall there, then the wall of the halacha separates, even though on the bottom it's all nourishing together. So Tosfos points out that the word kelaya means erbuvia. That's what the Targum translates. I always ask that as a trivia question. Well, what pasuk in Chumash has the name of one masechta in it, I think three or four times, and the Targum has the name of a different Masechta in it on the same Pasuk. So it's the Pasuk about Kilayim. It says, Sarchal of Sizra Kilayim, Every time it says the word Kilayim in the Pasuk, so the Targum says Erevin, because the word Erevin means mixed up. So Erevin is the Targum for the word Kilayim. So you want to catch your kids in Parshas Kedoshim, some trivia. So the din is that as long as you break up the Erevin, you break up the Kilayim, you break up the Tarobes, so then it's not considered to be a problem. So it's interesting. How do you break up the Erevin? By making an Erev, by making a wall. But you make a wall, so that breaks up the connection between the two species that are not supposed to be planted so next to each other. That's what the first break of Masechet Erevin has, all the sugyas of Truas HaPesach, the entire sugya of instead of building a wall, you build two poles and a wire, what we do in all our cities. So that's all rooted in the sugyas of Kilayim, the connection between Kilayim and Erevin. So comes the Bryce and says, great, wonderful, I have my grapes, you have your wheat, everyone's wonderful and happy. The only problem is the mechitza falls down. There's a breach in the mechitza. Mechitza kem shenifritza. So gevalt, you better get the mechitza rebuilt. And if the person didn't rebuild the mechitza on time, that's going to cause a problem. That's going to potentially trafe up, potentially aser all the other person's grains. So that's what we're going to have to see next week about what the ramifications of that statement are. So next week we'll continue. So I think next week...